Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant, here every single Wednesday night, here with Rob Drummond from the Syracuse. CFL and the NFL, played plenty of time, won a championship, was an undefeated Syracuse Orange in 1987, 11-0-1, going up against the SEC and taking care of business. When the number one used to come to Syracuse, Syracuse got that done. You saw the game 1983, a little bit before you started playing there against Nebraska. And like I said, we're here every single week. WakeUpCallDT.com. You can hear the playback for those of you listening in as well. Rob, FSU, it was an interesting game, but I think that we saw improvements. I think that the change, and that's where we'll start, is George McDonald not being the offensive coordinator anymore. They give the keys to Tim Lester, and the offense is totally different from what they were last year against Florida State. Did you see improvement there like I saw?
You know, I really don't believe in moral victories, but it's a very good moral victory for the simple fact that a lot of the young players stepped up. So looking at Syracuse for the future, it's very promising for the simple fact that a lot of these young players stepped up. But they didn't win the game. You know, it's frustrating, but it's definitely promising going to Western Wake Forest game.
When you see that last year, and I was down in Tallahassee for the game, but Syracuse faced Florida State, they lost 59-3, 56-point loss, this season an 18-point loss. Like you said, you don't like moral victories, but what can you say about progression? Because I didn't think Syracuse was going to beat Florida State in their first season in the ACC, nor did I think here in the second season in the ACC. But as long as you're showing a constant improvement, constant progression, what can you say about being embarrassed and losing by 56 and then having a game where you lose by 18?
You know what, watching the quarterbacks play last Saturday, I can say for next year, quarterback controversy. For the simple fact that, you know, Austin and AJ look great. They look poised out there, they look composed. They made a few mistakes here and there, but you know what? One's a redshirt freshman, one's a true freshman. They're really, really, really going to push Terrell coming back next year. So it's definitely going to be some competition. You're definitely looking forward. Not to skate away from the season because they have Wake Forest coming up on Saturday, but it's just promising to see these young guys go out there and be able to play and perform at a high level, knowing that really, if they make a mistake, it's going to be chalked up as a young freshman mistake. If they do great, it's going to be chalked up as a young freshman, you know, doing well. So it's just good to go out there and see those guys do well because it bodes well for the future.
When you're a freshman, and like you alluded to, the fact that Austin Wilson is, he's still a freshman, he's a redshirt freshman, didn't play last year, and at the same time, A.J. Long is a true freshman, and then Mitch Kimball, who we haven't seen this year, number three, he's a redshirt freshman that's never seen action as well. So when you look at what Syracuse has left, they're all newbies, all freshmen. This is their first season on the field. When you are a freshman and there's an expectation that you make a mistake, and if you do a good job, it's considered not better than if Terrell Hunt did it, but it's not expected for you to do it, so to speak. So is it good to be a freshman on this Syracuse team right now, or in general in this type of situation, knowing that the expectation is that you fail? So if you do succeed, obviously there's good points, and if you fail, it's not as heavily criticized as Terrell Hunt.
I mean, I can't say so much as it's good or bad, but for the simple fact that, you know, just being a player on a football team right now, you know, it takes a special, very special type of person to play Division I college football. And when given an opportunity, these young men go out there and just try and create an atmosphere that allows them to be successful, not just in football, but in academia, you know, in sociology, in class, and things of that nature. You know, so these young men have been given an opportunity from high school to be able to go out there and perform at a high level. And right now, this is the last time to go out there and just play.
Here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, once again, live from Borio's every single Wednesday night. Looking at A.J. Long, who we talked about a little bit, before we break it down and look at each piece of his game, overall, how did you feel the true freshman did in his first ever action as a college football player, doing it against the then number one team in the nation?
You know, it's stepping on a national stage, playing against the number one team in the country with a current Heisman Trophy winner, you know, in front of a packed house. I give that young man a lot of credit. I give both quarterbacks a lot of credit because that's an excuse game. And by excuse, I mean, as a freshman, as a young player, you go out there and you're, every single mistake you can make an excuse for. It's like, you know, this young man, neither young man didn't make excuses. They went out there and just played the games of their lives. They played at the caliber that, you know, basically gave us an insight that what they can do in the future. So it's going to be problems for the young man. I'm very, very proud of them. I saw a bunch of the players after the game at some of the tailgate parties with some of the former players came back up here. And I told each and every one of them as I saw them, whether it be Cam Lynch, whether it be Terrell, you know, whether it be the Dyson, you know, I saw them all. And I told them, I said, you know what, guys, as a former player, we're very, very proud of you. You may have lost the battle, but you won the war. The simple fact that you went up there and you fought. You were playing that number one team in the country with all the adversity in the world going against you. I mean, I watched the game, and it felt to me like the referee was against them, but I may be biased. But you know what? For them to go out there and perform like they did, just stand up on their shoulders and just play the game as hard as they possibly could, you know, it says a lot about the character of those young men and the character of them going forward.
I want to go to that in a minute, but one of the things that you said, you know, tailgating and having some of the former players for Syracuse beside yourself there, how important that is for any school, not just Syracuse, to have the support of people that have come before, because it shows something. I mean, if you don't have former players around the program, then that means that, you know, there's a coach or somebody on the staff or the school itself that's not going in the right direction or maybe push some people away. So who was there with you supporting the team this past game against Florida State?
I get to hear a list of bunch of names, you know, people, whether it be Pat Davis or whether, of course, it is, yeah, so Damian Rhodes, I mean, just and all these guys, even being at the 44s in the sports, with Jim Redline I saw there, I mean, the list goes on, the former players. But you know what? It's a good thing from the simple fact that, you know what, we as former players, you know, we believe in these guys, we trust in these guys, you know, we honor these guys because we've been in the same position ourselves. You know, so we'll always support them. Whether fans come or not, you know, we understand. So, you know, when the team starts losing, we get that. But you know what? As a former player, we understand what it takes to be able to turn that orange in that blue and be able to go out there and run out to that field and be able to play in front of not just a packed house, but a house that sits there and believes in you that you can possibly get it done. Sometimes you come up short. You know, you're not going to win every time. That's one thing I teach my sons also. But you know what? As long as you keep going out there and just keep trying and just keep working and just keep making yourself better each day, you know, eventually one day you'll kick in the door and get it done.
When you look at a game like Florida State and you talked about the team and how, you know, they really tried against this Florida State team where sometimes a team might give up if they don't have their starting quarterback. They had over a dozen injuries going into the game, more injuries going out of the game. But you saw this team fight. And like you said, Terrell Hunt, Cam Lynch, Dyson Davis, you got to see those guys. Even though Terrell didn't play, but Dyson obviously did, and Cam Lynch, what did they say to you about the end of this game and how they handled it? Because, you know, like you said, there's moral victories, but then there's the ones that actually count. How did they handle it?
You know, it's funny because they really didn't say anything. They just listened to me. I guess when you have a former, you know, superstar or a former star or a former legend comes back and talks to you, you really don't say much. You just listen. And, you know, and I could tell they were soaking and just listen to me because, I mean, I come from a winning environment in Syracuse. But the simple fact that, you know, we played in New Year's Day bowl games, you know. We had guys go to the Pro Bowl, you know. And, you know, guys get drafted in the first round, the second round, the third, you know. We had guys who were winners, you know. So they just want to understand what it takes to be a winner and try and understand that vibe, that feeling, that passion, that desire, that everything it takes to be that champion. You know, so a lot of times they really don't respond back, they just listen to me. I told them, you know, any time they're going to call me just to talk or anything, you can call any former player and talk. We're always there for them, you know. So we just have to instill in these young men. Because you have to remember, these young men are 23, 22, 21, they're young adults. You know, so they still have to be taught, they still have to learn the process by what it takes. Because everything in life is a process.
When you look at this process and you look at how the team has responded so far, I mean, obviously, George McDonald had some words out in the public, then he apologizes to Schaefer in private. Now, Scott Schaefer is not allowing anyone to talk to anyone on the staff unless it's offensive coordinator Tim Lester or defensive coordinator Chuck Bulla. What do you think about the atmosphere around the Syracuse program, knowing that the doors were kind of halfway shut, now they're almost completely shut, and they're trying to contain whatever's going on in the background. I mean, how does that look to fans? How does it look to you as a former player when you see the fact that you can't talk to the defensive line coach or the running back coach or, you know, at this point, George McDonald, the wide receiver coach, linebackers coach, defensive backs coach, all of these men have been quieted for the sake of whatever is going on inside the program. How do you think fans might look at that? How do you look at that?
You know, if I was a gambling man, I'd put $1 million on it being damage control. But you know, as a former player, all you do is tell it from the perspective of when I played. You know what? Our doors were open to talk to any reporter, to talk to any fan, to talk to anybody. It's a free phone door. You know, we were doing well at the time. But right now, when you're struggling, when you're trying to find yourself, when you're trying to find identity, when you're trying to find something to grasp onto, you know, you close up. And that's the worst thing they can do right now. But you know what? I'm an outsider looking in. I was a part of Syracuse, never part of the greatness. You know, the going 11-0, the going 10-2, you know, the going to bowl games constantly. I can't speak for this current team. I know these guys have hurt. I know these guys have trying, but you know what? The closing doors to the media, the closing doors to the band, the closing door to basically what's going on in the operations as they persist with the football team per se, you know, it's not a good thing. But hey, as I said before, I'm an outsider looking in now.
When you look back, I mean, obviously hindsight's 20/20, but allowing George McDonald to go out and do the media opportunity that I was at over a week ago, where he gave his opinions and he was a very honest man, and he said a lot of things that if he had known that he would have been replaced after 18 games as offensive coordinator, probably would have never left Arkansas. The fact that he was blindsided, you know, just a lot of things that aren't good for the program as a whole, but he's being an honest man. With hindsight being 20/20, as Syracuse, you know, as far as athletic communications, do you think that they maybe should have never let George go out there and just internalize that and allow the other coaches to talk? I mean, how do you think hindsight, how you would handle a situation with a demoted coach? Because I was surprised that they allowed him to come out.
You know what? It's just, I can't speak for the team. As I said before, I'm an outsider looking in. You know what? I looked at the game. Coach Lester called me. He called a great offensive game. Could they have made more plays? Yes, they could have. But you know what? Looking back on it, he called a great game. You know, did they need a change? Possibly, maybe. But you know what? It's not my decision to make or my decision the call. As I have said before, I'm an outsider looking in. I'm a former Orangeman. I don't deal with the current team right now. I'm not a player right now. I talk to players, but I mean, I'm one of the old guys now sitting there watching football. You know, and just say, could they have handled things differently? Maybe, possibly. You know, but as I said before, I don't know the inner workings of what they do daily on a daily basis, so I don't know why this shut down all of a sudden where no one can interview anyone except the offensive defensive coordinator. So I'm pretty sure they have a good reason for it. I'm pretty sure we may or may not find out about it, but it's on them.
And when we look at how this team is closed up as far as who you can talk to, you and I know Scott Schaefer personally. We know that he is a good leader. We know he's a good man. We know he has a lot of morals and values that drive the program. When something like this happens, knowing the type of guy that he is, like you said, there's got to be a good reason for it. How do you feel he's handling this whole situation? Because, I mean, you're the head coach. You make a tough decision. You demote somebody. You keep him on the staff. That almost never happens. And then all these things come out, and you have this all going on in the background. He got upset last week. Almost a week ago from Thursday, he got upset at that press conference that I was at, and it was understood why he would be upset. And then he kept saying that it's not in the best interest of the program. We have to move forward. Can't talk about it. We have to move forward. Trying to protect the sanctity of the environment. So how do you feel he's handled everything? Because he is getting hit with a lot of questions that I don't think he expected. And he's, in my mind, he's answered very respectfully. He's been good to the media. He hasn't yelled. He hasn't sworn. He hasn't stormed off. He's handled things well. On my side, how do you feel he's handled the whole situation?
Yeah, fine. To me, it's interesting. They call themselves a New York team. But you know, when it comes to public relations and things of that nature and being involved in the community of Syracuse, they shut themselves off. You figure it out. You know, as I said before, as a former player, I never shut out the media, I never shut out the Patriots, I never shut out anybody. They wanted to talk to me. If you wanted to talk to me, I have no problem talking to you. I'm not hiding anything. It is what it is. Stop hiding from what you are. Right now, you're a struggling team, you're doing bad, you demoted your offensive coordinator and put somebody else in. Did he do well? Yes, he did well. But to hide from the simple fact that these players and these coaches have emotions, you're shooting yourself in the foot. As I said before, a lot of coaches on the outside who come into Syracuse for the first time and try and coach here do not understand the community, the interconnect, basically me growing up in the city, what it takes to be a patron of Syracuse. And one day they'll get it. They don't stay here long enough to get it, but one day they will get it. And maybe he still may be here, he may be gone, but you know what? You can't shut yourself to the outside world. And that's just not for Syracuse University football. That's for anything in life. Think of some young child who's dealing with something out there, who's doing something bad. All of a sudden he wants to shut himself off from the world. What would you suggest, or what would you tell him? To not do that, right? To talk to somebody, right? To get it out, right? To get it off your chest, right? It's the exact same thing for college coaches, professional coaches, or whoever. To shut yourself out is a wrong move. But hey, as I said before, I'm an outsider looking in. I'm a fan now. I'm a former player. We won when I was there. I can teach them how to win. A lot of former players can teach them how to win. They choose not to listen. That's on them.
First coming from Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL, talking about Syracuse and some of the changes that have happened with the environment recently. Here with myself, Dan Satora. Wake Up Call with Dan Satora is here every single Wednesday night at Morio's, 6 to 8 p.m. normal time. Make sure you come out for us and see us here, and we'll be back. We just got started. A lot of things to talk about with Rob Drummond and myself. We'll be back here for Morio's.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary, or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here. Wake Up Call with Dan Satora from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero. For those listening in, here with Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. Been doing the show for over 2 years together now. First time doing it out here at Borio's during the football season, here every single Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. So make sure you come out and see us as we continue forward. We also have out here for everybody tonight, it is called a calling card. It'll get you 10% off at Borio's tonight, and whenever you use the card again, and it also has some of the other benefits of getting it. Card's free. You can just grab it at any time here up with us. And we were talking about Syracuse. We were talking, obviously, about some of the things that have happened, how they've clammed up, closed up, not really wanting to talk about anything. Florida State is a different team. They have a lot of things that are out there. They're not really shying away from them, hiding from them. I mean, Jameis Winston obviously is going to get asked a lot of questions. Jimbo Fisher, the Florida State head coach, is going to get asked a lot of questions. Going into the Syracuse game, there were a bunch of different stories. There were BB guns on campus and players using them to shoot at people, or shoot at things, you know, shoot all over campus, hit cars, different things. There's issues of lewd dancing from Jameis Winston. There's other issues, Jameis Winston with autographs, getting paid for them, stealing seafood. All of that's going on, yet they'll address it, they'll come out and they'll talk about it. Florida State has a lot of issues, but how have you seen them handle their issues as opposed to how Syracuse is handling the George McDonald thing? Because it seems like you're not allowed to talk to George McDonald, you're not allowed to talk about the situation, but Florida State is still going out into the media when, if anybody's going to hide, I would think they would be the team to hide.
Winners handle those situations head on. They deal with it up front. Losers hide behind curtains and skirt around the questions because they don't want to deal with it. You figure it out. I say, you know, I give Florida State a lot of credit for what they're going through right now with the whole James Winston situation, you know, Coach Fisher dealing with and everything. You know, do we think we're lying? Yeah, they're lying. But you know what? They're handling it in the media where it should be handled because, you know, people are going to be second guessing. There is no second guessing when they're sitting there explaining everything to you. Let it get done in the court of law. The court of law is there and sitting there in public. But when you hide there behind the public, you know, people are trying to figure out what's going on with your team. They want to understand you, and then they want to get ticked off when you don't come to the dome, because why would I go to a dome game and you're not telling me what's going on with the whole situation here with Syracuse? And I'm a former Orange. You know what? Let's come to my other former players also. It's like, yes, we have access to what's going on because we have backdoor access to be able to go in there because we're former players. But you know what? Let the fans know what's going on. Let the people who are trying to believe in you and still, you know, trust in you to be able to go out there and come to a game and cheer for you, know what's going on. But sit there and hide behind questions that people know. It's not good.
One of the things that I find hard is that, you know, when I do interviews each week, I make it a point to talk to position coaches, to not just talk to, because the coordinators get bombarded. Offensive coordinator has to deal with quarterback questions, tight end questions, offensive line, running backs, wide receivers. And then on the defensive side, same thing. They're dealing with multiple positions, multiple sets, who did what, when, where, different games. So I like to talk to position coaches like a Tim Doust on the defensive line or like running backs coach DeAndre Smith, because there's questions that they can answer that Chuck Bullock can't answer, that Tim Lester can't answer as the defensive and offensive coordinators respectfully. So when you close a door and you try and keep things quiet, you talk about the fans not knowing. On my side, one of my jobs as a broadcaster and a writer is to bring fans information. It's to share things with fans. It's to give them something they can't find anywhere else. And what I find difficult from here until further notice is that I can't really break down the defensive line or the running backs or the wide receivers the way that I think they should be broken down because of the way that the system is being run right now. So I look at it from that angle. You know, maybe just tell everybody, hey, don't ask about George McDonald. And if they do, then the coach has the opportunity to walk away from the podium or whatever it may be. But if the worry's George McDonald, let's not take away from the task at hand. And when I want to talk to somebody about Wake Forest, and I want to talk about NC State and Duke and Clemson and all the teams that are yet to come, I think that that's where Syracuse is going to be affected, because clamming up and hiding from the George McDonald issue is all ultimately going to keep us from being able to share with people the good things about Syracuse and the progress that they are making.
You know, the problem with Syracuse right now and what this football team doesn't get is that we as fans, and I'm a fan now also, former player, fan now, is that they have a human side. All these players, all these coaches, everyone has a human side, and they're not basically allowing us to see the human side, the emotions of these young men and these coaches. It's like, you know what? Everyone here, we're not blind. We know George McDonald, he's upset. You know, he's very upset for what happened to him. But you know what? Let him speak his mind. Let him get it off his chest. You know, it'll be good for him for the rest of the season. But because they're not hiding the obvious. They're trying to hide the obvious. The obvious, you know, when you try and hide something, you're hiding something, basically. You know, and that turns people off. That's what they don't get. That's why when Coach Mack was there, Coach Mack told us, he said, you know, speak your mind. Try and keep the team in mind. Try and keep the team at hand and try to keep the team to be respectful and everything, but speak your mind. Because you're a human being. You know, that's the one thing I always respected about Coach Mack. No matter whether we were winning, no matter whether we were losing, he always told us just to be ourselves, you know, be respectful, to speak your mind, because people love seeing the human side of a person. You know, and if you don't allow that, then people are second guessing as to what are they trying to hide. What is it you're trying to hide by trying to shut all these coaches down? Are you trying to hide the simple fact that George McDonald is mad? It's like, you know, wrong answer, you know, because we all know he is because of what you did to him. You know, granted, whether it was right or it was wrong, yeah. Tim Lester coached a great game, and he called a great game. I give him a lot of credit for it, but the young man is upset. And I say young man because he's younger than me. But he is upset. He's like, are you trying to hide that from us? I said, you know, you think we can't see that? We saw his interviews last week. So just let him present himself. Let him be human. Let him be real. Let him be raw. You know, get it off his chest and then move forward. You have Wake Forest next week. You still have 4 or 5 games left in the season. Be able to go out there and play these games with emotion. Play these games with pride. Play these games with passion. You know, and stop trying to hide what you really, really are.
Well, that's one of the things, too, that I saw is that, you know, Scott Schaefer talked about it for a little while, the situation with George, and then at the end of it all, he said, I'm not talking about it anymore. That's what he said in his press conference last week going into Florida State. He said very nicely, very respectfully, the way that I would expect him to, based on knowing him and knowing his nature. He said, I'm not going to talk about it. We're moving forward. So I think it's the same respect for any coach that you don't keep a coach from talking to people. You don't keep a coach from coming out to the community because, I mean, let's face it, Tim Doust, Clark Lee, Fred Reed, all these guys are position coaches, but someday they might want to be an offensive or defensive coordinator. They might want to be a head coach somewhere. So the more you talk to the community, the more you show your demeanor, the more you talk about your hard work and what you're teaching, the better off they are because your resume is always out there. It's not just how you play on the field. It's also how you handle the media and how you handle life in general, and they all have a special message. I mean, there's a reason why Scott hired each of these guys, so I think the best way to go about it would to say, don't talk about this. If you get asked about this, respectfully say, we're not going to talk about this. And that's what's happened before. I mean, I've been up and down the East Coast and to a lot of different things, and they'll say, hey, we're not going to talk about this situation today. And for the people that do, the coach says, you know the rules. And for the people that don't, the coach answers the question. I think that's the best way to go about it, because knowing a lot of the coaches, I think they're going to get hurt by this, and I think they're going to get affected by it. It might actually happen the wrong way, where you're trying to keep the environment positive by closing off from the community. But I think what actually might happen is you might have a more negative environment, because now George isn't the only one shut up. Everybody has duct tape on their mouth, and I think that's going to affect you eventually, especially in recruiting, because now the players can't hear from their coaches that have been recruiting them.
Here's the thing. They clammed up. What question can't be asked? What questions does the Syracuse University football team not want to answer right now? I answer them for you. I spent 4 years of my life playing football for Syracuse University, day in and day out, up and down. I understand every situation, every technique, everything that's going on. What question do they not want to answer right now? What question would a reporter want to answer? I can answer it for them, probably. Guaranteed. What question? What do they not want to ask? Is George McDonald upset? Yes. Will he be here yet next year? No. Not a chance. I'm 99.99% sure he will not be here next year by how he was treated. What, do they not want to say that right now? Midway through the season? Is that going to stop the players from playing hard? No. Is that going to stop the players from coaching? No. Is that going to stop the fans from coming to the game? No. Let the fans know what's going on so they can be support you 100% instead of keeping them at bay and trying to let them understand. Any question that can be answered up and down that unit of football players and coaches, I can answer for you. What are they trying to hide from? I don't see. That's what I don't get. I don't understand. Why is he climbing up in the situation? He's trying not to answer questions that basically that people already know. They just want to hear it from the horse's mouth, and that's all they're trying to do. And they shoot themselves in the foot by not hearing it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, coming from Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL, and of course, I'm here with you, Dan Satora, of Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Borio's Restaurant. We're here live every single Wednesday from 6 to 8, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. And we will be back in just a few minutes, and we'll be tackling one of the things that your former quarterback, Don McPherson, is doing, and that's talking about bullying in the community. He's back in Central New York, and Don McPherson is addressing bullying and domestic violence, and we're going to be talking about that and how we can make it better and how you can utilize sports, even the game of football, to help people make better decisions. That'll be coming up on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live here from Borio's Restaurant. And once again, grab a card. Come up to the table and get one for yourself, and it'll get you 10% off at Borio's tonight, and it'll get you 10% off throughout the football and basketball season. Use it anytime you want.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care. The local people that always come back care. And the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero. For everybody listening in Cicero, New York, make sure you grab your 10% off card at Borio's tonight. You can use it anytime throughout the basketball and football season, so you have from now all the way through April. No matter how far Syracuse gets, you get 10% off at Borio's, as well as discounts to Carvel and Cam's Pizzeria, and those are compliments of Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, and these are here for you every single Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m., as well as Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and NFL alum, and of course myself, Dan Satora, here talking with you on Syracuse, on football, and on other things that have crept their way into the sports world. And one thing that I thought of, you know, I knew as a junior in high school I wanted to be a sportscaster, and I knew I wanted to do that. And one of the things I love about sports, and that I love growing up, is that sports is what I like to call the good news. When you watch the regular news and you see all the negative things that are going on, and shootings, stabbings, burglaries, robberies, all this stuff, I always felt like sports was a release, shoplifting, which is now in sports, and we'll talk about that. But I always thought that it's ridiculous. Over $400,000 and you steal something worth $120. But we'll talk about it. Joseph Randle doesn't play anyways. But here's the thing. When I decided to become a sportscaster, part of the reason why I did it was to bring good news to people. It was to not have drama, it was to not have negativity, it was to give people a release from the normal news, the CNN news, so to speak. And what I found that creeping into the sports world is that this negativity is running in everywhere. Bullying is coming in, domestic violence, child abuse, and your former quarterback, Don McPherson, is back in the community, and he is talking with the community in Central New York about bullying, about domestic violence. And the first thing that I want to go to with this is, what does it mean to you, knowing the man that Don McPherson is, that he came back to this community of all communities and said, you know what, I want to talk to Central New York about being better to your children, better to your spouse, better to the people you go to school with? What does that mean to you?
I mean, it's not shocking at all. I mean, when I retired from the CFL in 2003, I was living in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is on the other side of the world, pretty much, over above the state of Washington. You know what? It was a no-brainer to me to come back to Syracuse. You know, this community always accepted me, you know, always believed in me, always backed me. The dome was always packed. They always cheered for me. You know, when I made a bad play, everything, it was always okay. I just go out there and make it for the next time. They always supported me, you know, and every former player from when I played believed the same thing. So Donnie coming back here to me is just something that's just so natural. It's just something that doesn't surprise me. It's just something that just probably expected, you know, because every former player I know always says what it was like to be here at Syracuse, you know, just not on a university, but just like the fans, the community, and just how we were treated when we went to school here.
We can't speak on Don's behalf, but we can speak on our own. You and I have talked about bullying, domestic violence, child abuse, everything that's been going on. Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, Hardy from Carolina, and countless others that have been involved, that have either been caught, been covered up, not been caught yet, are serving time, whatever it may be. How do you feel the NFL has been responding to the issue of domestic violence and child abuse? Do you feel like there's been an adequate response to what's been going on?
I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, they're pretty much right now in damage control. You know, and it's hard for me to understand the thought process of an individual once they're in damage control. You know, that's like Michael Vick. When Michael Vick wasn't humble. Michael Vick wasn't, you know, caring. Michael Vick wasn't, you know, a man with humility until he was caught. You know, so until someone is put in a situation where you stand up for something that's going on before it gets caught, before it gets big, before it becomes something in the national media, you know, it's hard to tell what that type of person is. And even with the NFL, this has been going on for a long time in the NFL. And all of a sudden now it's come to the light. They need to stand up for women's rights. They need to stand up for, you know, for the victim. Nah, you know, it's hard to believe and it's hard to trust in an organization that stands up for something once it gets caught or once it gets brought to the limelight. You know what? Stand up before it even happens. You know what? There have been a lot of women abused out there before Ray Rice punched his wife, you know, or girlfriend at the time, you know. So the NFL, you know, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, but you should have done this a long time ago.
Is that what you see more now? Because it's hard to find a time in the NFL or even in college football. It's hard to find a time where recently where somebody's coming out, Florida State's coming out saying, hey, Jameis Winston may or may not have done X, Y, or Z. We're going to figure it out. Ray Rice may have done X, Y, or Z. We saw the tape. We're going to figure it out. It doesn't seem like sports is covering an issue before somebody like me finds out, before a reporter gets there and you know, finds their way through a police report or ends up being in the right place at the right time and sees something. So what is that saying about the way we're handling sports these days and handling players and coaches these days, that, you know, even Bobby Petrino, what, now he's at Louisville, but before he was at Louisville, he wasn't caught having an affair until he got in an accident on his motorcycle, just so happened to be with a girl, lied about it, had to tell the truth, ended up losing his job. So what do we do now? Because it seems like we're only talking about it. If I'm a coach, I'm only addressing the issue once you force me to address the issue, where if I really was a coach and I knew Jameis Winston was getting money for autographs, I would have suspended him and I would have gone out to the community and said, Jameis is going to sit out a game, and if he learns his lesson, he can play next week.
First off, let's be quite clear. As a former player for 4 years at Syracuse, I knew everything that was going on in that campus as a player. Whether it be basketball, whether it be lacrosse, whether it be soccer, if an athlete was doing it or it was being done, I know it was being done, whether it be good or bad. Whether I chose or told, that was my discretion. But these coaches know what's going on. These teachers know what's going on. These players know what's going on. As I said before, Jameis Winston would have had one indiscretion, and you can chalk it up as him being, you know, a child kid being, you know, boys being boys. But, you know, time after time after time after time, this young man is getting into trouble. Now, Jameis Winston is not a good person. You know, he's a very, he's an egomaniac, narcissistic, elitist type individual who got very, very talented early on in his career, and everyone treats him like, you know, he's a king of all world down there, you know, so he's going to continue to happen. Did he sign those pictures or autographs? 100%. There's over 350 pictures he signed, or paraphernalia he signed for autographs. There's no way in the world I've ever met another player in my 15-year pro career to ever sign that many things and all for free. Of course he did it. But of course he's got to say that to protect himself and try and hold on to his college career. So, you know what? The NCAA has their work cut out, you know, and I hope they get on top of this before it gets too late. You know, I personally have a talk with Gerald Gross. I was supposed to be this week, but I'm way too busy this week. But I told him, why isn't every athlete at the Syracuse University, on the Syracuse University campus, taking a class in financial planning and management? They all should be taking that, because there's a lot of these young kids who've never come from money before, get all this money once they go out into the pros. Even if they don't get all this money, they go out into like the working world, they don't know how to balance finances, and they end up broke and they end up poor. What a great opportunity to get these kids and teach them how to learn how to balance money, how to, you know, and how to have a financial future. Me coming out myself, I was fortunate, because when I went down there, I got drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm here from Syracuse. I never moved out of Syracuse my entire life until I got drafted by the Eagles. I went down to the I was down in Philadelphia for a week, and I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to balance a checkbook. I didn't know how to write purchases. I didn't know how to do things. Thankfully, by the grace of God, my mother and father were able to come down there and show me how to do this. It took them a month, but, you know, they showed me how to basically live and how to go out there and basically balance a checkbook, you know, buy things that I need, and just, you know, and keep a budget. These are what these kids know how to do, how to budget and how to balance.
You said that you're going to be sitting down with Dr. Gross, the athletics director of Syracuse, to express that each player on campus, no matter what sport they play, field hockey, soccer, basketball, football, volleyball, that they have to take a class in financial planning and management. What can that do? I mean, do you think at this point, with them in college, that taking a class like that is going to pay dividends in the future for them? Do you really think if we catch it now, it'll be the right thing to do for them?
Are you kidding me? This is taking a class like that in high school. As with anything in life, you know, to be successful in life, you have to learn how to be successful. Once you get to college, a lot of these athletes, they get the big heads, they get the starstruck status, I'm holier than God now, and you can't teach them. They need to start learning this at a very, very early age. You need to start learning this in high school, how to be responsible, and not just be responsible, be financially responsible. Because a lot of these guys, once they get to the NFL, where do they start throwing their money on? You know, on cars, on jewelry, on things that appreciate as soon as you pay them off the lot. They need to know how to take that money and invest it in a life insurance plan. Invest it in a plan that will provide money for their kids once they have kids to go to college and things of that nature. Invest it in their future, because one day, the NFL will leave them. The NFL guaranteed right now, the average age lifespan of the NFL player is 3 years. 3 years. So they have 3 years to maximize that growth potential as far as income. You know what? So even whether it be girls volleyball players, girls soccer players, boys basketball players, pro sports is not a lifetime. Pro sports is anywhere between a 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 year career. You get 5 years and you're very, very lucky. So these young people have to learn how to maximize about that potential in those 5 years.
When we look at something like that, to come up with that, and I think that's obviously something that's going to be important. You know, you expanded on financial planning and management, a class that Syracuse players should take. Probably any college player should be taking. You're not the first person that said this to me. Former Jacksonville Jaguar is actually down in Florida making his money off of a business he created where he meets with players to help prevent them from bankruptcy. And he said, you know, too many times a player comes after you once they're bankrupt. Once they've spent all their money, they don't know what to do. They're completely broke. They don't know how to handle it. And he said, my job is to try and express that we need to get to them while they're still playing, while they're in their career in the NFL. Saying to even do it before, to have that type of care for something like that. Who do you think should teach a class like this? I mean, how would you handle that? Should it be someone from the outside completely? I mean, if someone was to come into Syracuse and teach a class like this, what type of mind do you think really needs to be here for this and get students? Because we know not all students are the same. Some like to learn, some could care less, some show up to class, some don't. But a class like this isn't just a class, it's about life. So who would you really command to come in a situation like this?
There are tons of people who are good with kids, who can basically teach these students how to basically live life, how to save for life, and how to plan for life, you know what I mean? But it just goes without saying, as I said, there's someone for everyone. So I got a list of people, that's what I'm talking to Dr. Gross about, a list of people who've done this before, you know, but they've done it for regular students. They've never done it for student-athletes, you know, so it's just something that I think, you know, why not teach these kids how to save money, how to invest in themselves before they get the money? Because once you get them, after they've had it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it's all gone, it's all dried up, because they spend money going out and buy $20,000 stereo systems, you know, $60,000, $70,000 worth of clothing, pursuits, and things of that nature, you know, 3, 4, 5 homes, 7, 8, you know, that's money that's all they can't recoup and they can't get back. And eventually, either we'll foreclose or go bankrupt. I'm so tired of seeing young athletes that I know eventually, at the end of the day, go bankrupt. You know, these guys have made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars before. But it ended up bankrupt. You know, Allen Iverson, you know, Vinny Testaverde, you know, Antoine Davis. You know, it's sad for me to see it. These young men need to understand what it's like to be able to save money and prepare themselves for the future, because pro sports is not a lifetime. It's fleeting.
And you bring up something that, and you had a very interesting story, and you and I obviously have known each other for a while.
Yes.
And, you know, we've been friends for a while, and you shared this with me, and when you got your contract with the Eagles, your family did something interesting. They took your money for your contract and they put you on an allowance. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but in your first year, they had your money. In your second year, they had your money. money. In the third year, they gave it to you to see what you would do with it. So you had this interesting scenario. What did your parents taking your money? I mean, you're a man. You're in the NFL. You know, you're a young man. You earn this money, and you're going out, and you want to do things with it. And your parents said, you know what, Robert? We love you. We're going to take it, and we're going to give it to you. Almost like, you know, still a parent to child. You're going to get an allowance every month that you can work with. What did that do to help you be smart about your money? Because obviously you're here, you're not bankrupt. You have your own business. You're working on more businesses. So what did your parents' decision, as far as money goes, do to help your life and help get you to where you are today?
It just taught me the simple fact that, I knew how much I was making a week, but you know what? It was out of sight, out of mind. You know, so they took that money and saved it, you know, and they would give me a basic allowance, or if I needed something, I would call them and tell them, and they would send me money down to heaven. I have my basic necessities, you know, pay my bills, pay the mortgage, you know, pay for gas, pay for simple things like that. But you know what? The rest of that part of that money, they stored away. They stored away money for it. You know, at the time, they never tell. They said, you're going to have kids one day, so they put it on a life insurance policy, you know, a policy, you know, put it towards a child education, things of that nature, you know, put in investments and everything, you know. So my third year, first contract, they told me, you know, we want you to see what it's like to feel like to be able to get that much money in your hand and see what it's like to and try and deal with it. And at that time, it's just like, at the end of the year, I remember saying to myself, it's like, I cannot believe I spent that much money. You know, what people don't understand is that if money is presented to you right there in front, you'll spend it. But if it's not there, if you take money, you defer it, or you put that money somewhere, and it goes directly into a savings account or a money market account, and you don't know it's there, you'll never even think about it. That money will grow and grow and grow and grow. By the time you retire, that money will be a huge asset, a huge nest egg for you. So if you get it in front of you, if you see that money in front of you, it'll burn a hole in your hand. If you don't even know it's here, you won't even worry about it. You can, it'll work for you.
When you look at the environment and the way things are now, the contract that you've got, as a pretty high pick too in the NFL, was not what guys are getting now. Not anywhere near what guys are getting now. So how do you think the NFL should handle something like this if not everyone took a financial planning and management class, if they don't have an agent that's looking out for their best interest, if they don't have someone in their corner that is doing their accounting and handling things for them? What do you suggest maybe the NFL can do? Is there a way to maybe look at the contract or how you're going to give the money out? I mean, I know collective bargaining, the agreement changed recently, but how can the NFL try and handle this? Because a lot of guys that are getting into the NFL didn't only come from not having millions of dollars. I mean, not a lot of people have $1 million when they're kids, but these are some kids that didn't have $10 in their pocket. These are some guys that didn't know what it was like to have a $100 bill until they got to the NFL. So what can the NFL do? Do you think that they should assign a financial planner to each team? I mean, how do you think you can assess the situation once it's almost too late?
You know, the NFL is a corporation, and any corporation wants to make themselves look better, correct? You know, I think the NFL, I'll put it this way, there's 32 teams. I guarantee you the owners, the CEOs, and all upper management personnel on every NFL team has a financial planner, correct? I guarantee you they all do. 99.9999% of all those CEOs and all those owners and all those people in your restaurant in the NFL have financial planners. You know what? Let the players on your team have your financial planners also. Or they can suggest financial planners for these young men. If they have them, why would you allow your players to have them also? Because these are your investments, correct? You're investing millions of dollars into these young men, correct? You want these young men to do well, correct? You want these young men to represent your team in a financial manner as well on the field, correct? If you care less and all you care about is them playing, it shows. But right now, what does it tell you? If they're not representing these young men with financial planners, they can secure their future. What do? They could care less at that point. So if I'm an owner, say I'm Ersay with the Colts right now, I'm telling each and every single player, said, you know what, it may not be my financial planner, but you will talk to a business management that he represents, or someone, maybe it's 10 guys, you can get a pick of 10 guys. One of these 10 guys you will represent, and they will help you with your contract your first 2 years. After your first 2 years, you decide to go someplace else, you decide to squander your money, that's on you. But at this point, for the person who uses your contract, you will be represented by one of these sweet guys. Maybe they get a small commission, thing of nature. But I want you to start investing and saving your money. You know, because not only will that make you a successful man later on in life and have money, that will make you be looking good as an owner.
Big words coming from Rob Drummond. Things need to change, obviously, in the NFL, and we know that. Here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Borio's Restaurant, live here every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., 8891 McDonald's Parkway, McDonnell's, not McDonald's, McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those of you listening in. We'll be back here. We'll be back on wakeupcalldt.com, and we'll be back live from Borio's Restaurant. Rob Drummond and myself, Dan Satora, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora. Make sure you grab one of your 10% off cards to Borio's Restaurant while we're here. The only time you can get them is when we're physically here. We'll be talking about money up next, but not about people saving money. We'll be talking about Joseph Randall's decision to save some of his money in an interesting way. That's coming up on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary, or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant. Every single Wednesday night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., we are here, so make sure you come out and see us every Wednesday, and make sure you grab one of these cards, because they're not just good for tonight, they're good every day that Borio's is open. Obviously, you know they're not open on Mondays, so Sunday through Saturday, you can use this, except for Mondays, on 10% off anything that you get here at Borio's when it comes to lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch. You can get the 10% off. The only thing it's not good for is any parties that you book or anything like that. So you can use it on lunch and dinner as well as brunch. Make sure you come and get a card while we're here. And for everybody listening in, make sure you come out to 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York to get your card, which is the calling card here, special VIP offers for Borio's Restaurant. Here with Rob Drummond from the Syracuse CFL and NFL history, and of course myself, Dan Satora, with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, and we were talking about money and finances, and I guess one of the ways to save your money is to not pay for things, and that's something that Joseph Randall decided to do, and it seems like every time the Dallas Cowboys have good news, someone on their team has to be an idiot. Somebody has to go out, get caught in a club doing something suspect, do something in a casino, do something with drugs, do something with stealing. It seems like the Cowboys can't stay away from bad publicity when they have good publicity. And Joseph Randall, who's really been insignificant this season because DeMarco Murray is the leading rusher in the NFL, is the starting running back for the Cowboys. Joseph Randall decided to steal two things. And he not only stole them, but according to a police report, after stealing Ralph Lauren, I believe, underwear, which was $39.50, and an $84 bottle of cologne that was a tester in the store. When he took these out of the mall, $123.50, he makes over $400,000 this year. When he stole them, according to the police report, he told the police officer if he had known he was going to be arrested, he would have walked away from the security guard who he referred to as quote-unquote the old guy, and he would have went to his car and he would have left. So he knew what he was doing was wrong. He didn't care about it. And the two things that we know is that he has clean underwear and he smells good now. But the decision to steal $120 worth of merchandise when you're making almost $500,000 in a season, I mean, let's address it. I mean, I don't know how many great things you could say about this, but what do you say to a player that is stealing when the player is making more money than anybody that walked into that store that day?
It's the same reason that players decide to drive a car when they're drunk, when they're making the same amount of money, they can take a cab they can take a limousine for that matter. You know, why do guys do what they want to do when they make money like that and they can just so easily, you know, just defer from it? You know, I can't get inside the mindset of a football player who's a bad player. Bad people all over the place. You know what? This young man is making, as you said before, almost $500,000, and he decides to steal $123 worth of something that would have cost him nothing. Can't get inside the mind of a bad person. Bad people are bad, regardless.
When you're on a team like the Cowboys, how do you address something like this? I mean, we talked about Syracuse and Florida State college football addressing issues, the NFL addressing domestic violence, child abuse, everything going on, bullying being addressed now. How do you, if you're Jerry Jones, and we know that he's made phenomenal decisions, and I mean that extremely sarcastically for those that didn't catch that, Joseph Randall, how do you handle a player like him? If you're Jerry Jones and you're the judge, jury, and executioner of the Dallas Cowboys, how do you handle Joseph Randall right now?
I mean, it's an in-house situation where I know he's going to get laughed at by his players because this player sees it as a silly situation because he had the money to pay for it, but then what made him steal it? Was his youth plan coming up? You know, did he not have money growing up, so he was used to stealing, so it was a mindset? You know, did he have a psychological outbreak for the simple fact that he was so used to doing that and he didn't want to pay for it at the time? And just, you know, who knows? But it's an in-house situation, and each team can handle it differently. So that's something that Jerry Jones, the coaches, and the managers here are going to have to deal with.
You know this, and I know this. If it was DeMarco Murray, and I'm not saying that the Cowboys would do this, I'm just saying this in general. If it was your starting running back who's leading your team, leading the country in rushing yards, your team's 5-1, I think you and I can both agree that there's some teams out there that would potentially cover this up. It's Joseph Randall, so nobody cares because Joseph Randall is insignificant. He has like 50 yards on the season through six games. But if it was DeMarco Murray, do you feel like I feel that this would have been a different scenario?
Mr. DeMarco Murray, we probably never hear about it. The simple fact is brushed under the rug because right now the Cowboys have a chance of going very, very far. And, you know, and money supersedes everything here, not just in the NFL, but in its entire world. You know, and DeMarco Murray could make them a lot of money by winning a Super Bowl. So if it's DeMarco Murray right now that gets caught stealing, it's brushed under the rug.
We've dealt with this in Syracuse with Michael Carter Williams in the mall, taking something out of the mall. Same thing with Joseph Randall. Went into a mall, stole something, took it. Michael Carter Williams had to pay for it for a while. He had, every time he went on the road, I was at the Villanova game in Philadelphia, your old stomping grounds, and every single time that he went up to the free throw line, the chant was Lord and Taylor. So, and you can't blame fans for doing it because my dad told me a long time ago, people can hate you, but don't ever give them a reason. In the case of Michael Carter Williams, you gave them a reason, and Lord and Taylor just so happens to rhyme pretty well when you're shooting free throws. So if you're the Dallas Cowboys, whether Joseph Randall's on the field or not, has he already given them hatred that they didn't deserve? Has he kind of put a black eye on them?
I don't think he's given the Cowboys much hatred because people don't like the Cowboys regardless of whether this incident happened before or not. You know, but for the simple fact that, as you said before, it'll give him some catchy slang to be able to yell at the Cowboys when they're playing, but as you said, he's not on the field. He's insignificant to their run, to whatever they're trying to do this year in football. You know, so, I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal. You know, it's going to be brushed over. You know, the young man made a huge mistake. He's going to get fined. He's going to have to pay his penalty. He's going to pay his dues, you know, and then we'll move forward.
Oh, really? Joseph Randall's in the NFL. You and I talked about it before here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora live at Borio's Restaurant. We've talked about, here from Borio's, the situation of players making bad decisions, and you have to teach them, like you said, high school is your last chance. You know, they're toddlers, they're in kindergarten, they're in elementary school, junior high, high school. After that, it's going to be harder to get it done. A guy like Joseph Randall, who is still stealing when he's making almost $500,000, what can you do to reprimand a guy like him? I mean, how money doesn't matter to him. So how do you handle a situation like Joseph Randall, where whatever he was supposed to get taught, he didn't get taught in high school, he didn't get taught as a toddler, he didn't get taught in elementary school, and he didn't get taught in college. So what do you do now?
You know, maybe have him work at the store he stole from for community service for a few hours, you know, just to see what it feels like to be the working type of people that you're stealing from and things of that nature. You know, I, as I said, I don't know. I'm not Jerry Jones. I'm not the owner of the Cowboys, but maybe community service would be better for him than paying it back, because at least paying it back, he has the money to pay it back. But community service, it's his time now. So, and most people, to them that I know, their time is valuable to them.
This is what I would do, Joseph Randall. While you were talking, I thought about it. And it doesn't have to be Joseph Randall. It could be anybody. It could be Jameis Winston, because there's another alleged stealing of plenty of seafood there. And I think when he got caught, he said that he didn't know he didn't pay for it. So, interesting. But when you look at a situation like Joseph Randall, Jameis Winston, Michael Carter Williams when he did it, I think what they should do, and you talk about time. Time is money, right? Time is money. You don't get paid if you're not at the game, unless you're Greg Hardy and you got paid for being suspended. So this is what I would do with Joseph Randall. I would not only not fine him, because money is not an issue, but I would take what you said and I would make him work at the store that he stole from, but I would make him work at the store that he stole from during a Dallas Cowboys game that he's supposed to be at. So he's not making his money, he's not at the game, he's not watching the game, and his job for that day, so he can learn what it's like to not be in the NFL anymore and know how quickly it can be taken away, his job for the game is going to be to work in a department store while the rest of his team gets to do what they like to do, and that's play some football. What do you think about that?
It'd be pretty interesting. It make it behind wake up quick, but you know what? In the same retrospect, you know, look at guys like Colin Kaepernick, you know, who else got suspended for wearing the B-tech on the sideline? They get fined. These guys can get fined $11,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, and they still turn around and do the same thing sometimes, you know? So, I mean, I think the idea of making someone work for, you know, for much less than what they would have, and plus give that money that they work for to another charity or to some charity they took from, would be a great idea, but I'm not sure if they were learning that.
There's another thing that people get fined for in the NFL. And before we take our next break, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora live here from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. For those listening in, we're here every single Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Make sure you come out and see us, and make sure you grab your card. That'll get you discounts throughout the community of Central New York, not just Borio's. But Borio's will give you 10% off if you have this card. It's free. You don't have to give us anything for it. You can use it anytime you want, and it is something that you can only get when we're here. One of the things that players get fined for in the NFL, and this is hard for me, because I like the entertainment value of the NFL. I do like this. And I know you said when you scored a touchdown, you would just give the ball to the ref. And I get that. I understand that. And if you're Cam Newton and your team is down by 20 points to the Giants, I think it was back in the day, to not celebrate when you score a touchdown in the fourth quarter and you have no chance of winning. But I don't think that players should be fined for a touchdown celebration, nor do I think that they should be penalized 15 yards on the kickoff for a touchdown celebration, as long, and this is key, as long as the touchdown celebration is not disrespectful, derogatory, or shameful to either your team or the team that you're playing against. No middle finger, no suggestive behavior. But I'm for touchdown celebrations. If the NFL is going to take away a penalty or take away a fine, do you think that they should keep or get away, or take away, I should say, the touchdown celebration fine?
I think as long as it's not disrespectful. I mean, it's the spirit of the game. Guys are having fun. They're around there flying around, just expressing their opinions and everything. As long as it's not disrespectful to anybody, I don't think they should be fined.
when we look at some of the celebrations, it's funny because two players 2 weeks ago, same 1 o'clock games, different referees. One player threw the ball on the ground, fell on top of the ball. He got penalized 15 yards with his team. Another player did a dance for about a minute. You know, let me say 30 seconds. But he did the hula hoop dance for 30 seconds. Ref stood right next to him, no call. So what I see is it's kind of at the ref's discretion, and I think maybe it's kind of like So You Think You Can Dance or Dancing with the Stars. If they like the dance, they don't penalize anybody. If they don't like the dance, then they give you the 15-yard penalty. So I don't really understand it because some refs will just let you do it. Victor Cruz has a connection, in my mind, with Time Warner Cable and has all these endorsements because people got to know him for his salsa dancing in the end zone that never got, as far as I know, penalized. But some of these other guys aren't allowed to do any of their dances that aren't disrespectful. So how do you handle this? Because Victor Cruz is making a good amount of money, but if Victor Cruz wasn't the salsa dancer, I don't think a lot of people would know who he was.
You know what? You're trying to pick your NFL referees out? Good luck. And when you do, please let me know, because I have no idea where their heads are.
Then or not.
Touchdown celebration. I'm for him. If I was in the end zone, especially in the Super Bowl, I'd be doing some dancing. I'm Italian and Spanish. I have to show respect for my heritage, if for nothing else. Dan Zatora, right here with you, and my partner Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and the NFL. We'll be back here, Borio's Restaurant, live wake-up call with Dan Zatora every single Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Make sure you grab your Borio's card. This is an exclusive VIP card. You can use it throughout the football and basketball season, and you can only get it through wake-up call with Dan Zatora. It's our way of saying thank you to the community for your support. So make sure you grab your card here at the table, and we'll be back from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, to talk about Syracuse and Wake Forest. And Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson, who I spoke with this morning, has a lot of respect for Syracuse and was saying a lot of things about Syracuse that I don't even know if Syracuse fans would be saying right now. He said a lot of different things that I think are very, very interesting. And so we'll be sharing those with you for my conversation with Dave Clawson coming up here on Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora from Borio's Restaurant.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Borio's Restaurant, Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora. We're live every single Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. And the only time you can get these cards from us, which has Borio's, Carvel DeWitt, and Cam's Pizzeria, the calling card is here when we're here every single Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. We will be here tomorrow night, and it will be 7:45 to 9. It's a special showcase. Rob will not be sitting next to me. It'll be Adrian Autry, assistant coach of the Syracuse Orange men's basketball team. Adrian and I will be previewing Orange Madness, which is on Friday, October 18th. So he'll be previewing with me all the guys that are going to be playing, the former Syracuse Orange that are going to be playing in the Legends game. We'll talk about them going up against Syracuse. We'll go ahead of the dunk contest and the three-point contest. And we'll also talk about what song Adrian will be coming out to. He used H to the OB by Jay-Z last time, so We'll talk to him about that, but you definitely want to come out to Boreo's tomorrow night for a special showcase. Adrian Autry and I will be here talking about Syracuse basketball and premiering Orange Madness. So before the fans get to see anything, we're going to let you get a little sneak peek of what you can expect from the Syracuse basketball team, Orange Madness, dunk contest, three-point contest, and so much more. And we're going to talk to him about the Syracuse rankings and some of the things going on with the Syracuse Orange. So make sure you come out for that. And, of course, next Wednesday and every Wednesday for Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and the NFL. And, of course, myself, Dan Satora, here with you every single Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. So the pleasantries are aside. You and I have to talk about a few different things, one of them being Syracuse playing Wake Forest in their next game. And Dave Clawson, first-year head coach of Wake Forest, I spoke with him today going into this show that we have here at Boreo's, and he was talking to me about Syracuse, and he said, I think number one, when you look at Syracuse, it's how physical they are. That was something that he said to me, is that the first thing he thinks of when he thinks of the Syracuse Orange is physicality. And he said that has to do with having three seniors and two juniors on the offensive line. He also talked to me about 32 players that are in the two-deep situation for Syracuse, both the first string and second string, that are juniors and seniors, to talk about their experience and veteran status. And when Scott Schaefer talks about Syracuse, he does talk about it as a little bit more of a younger team. There's true freshmen that are out there on the field in offense, defense, and special teams, as well as redshirt freshmen. So I thought it was interesting that Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson thinks of Syracuse as a veteran group, as a group that has a lot of veteran status. So how do you take that from the outside looking in, knowing that the opponent of Syracuse sees Syracuse as more of a veteran squad than he does a young squad?
I think they're the type of squad that basically, I mean, are a veteran squad, but these guys have been playing for a long time, so that's probably why I think they're veteran. But the simple fact of being physical, I like that more than anything else. I said before, you may lose a battle, but win the war. That's one thing we did back when I played. You know what? We may have lost games, but we sat there and beat up on teams, because at the end of the day, you always want a team to know, because you're going to play them again eventually in the future, that how physical you are, you're not going to give up a fight, and you're going to go out there and fight as hard as you can. But the physical standpoint for Syracuse being what this coach has said is what I think they should be proud of and hang their heads on.
When you know that there's teams out there that are seeing, like Dave Clawson, seeing Syracuse as a very physical squad, like you said, that's what you were in the 80s, that's what you knew for Syracuse back in the positive moments of Syracuse football. They were physical, even after you, with Keith Bullock, with Chandler Jones being physical. So what can you say about the fact that there are coaches that are starting to give Syracuse this reputation again? Do you buy into this reputation? Do you think that it's, you can see where they're coming from when they look at Syracuse this way?
I mean, it's a reputation that we've had in the past, so it's a reputation that definitely precedes us. You know, I understand it. But what I saw them do against Florida State, I was very, very proud of them. I was very, very impressed with them. You know what? As I said before, they lost the battle, but they won the war. They physically beat up on Florida State, and they surprised Florida State. If Florida State came on flat, I have no idea. But you know what? I know Syracuse went out there and took it to them. And at the end of the day, Florida State gave them a lot of respect for the simple fact that they just didn't lay down. They put up a heck of a fight.
And putting up the fight that Syracuse put up against Florida State, before we go further into my conversation with Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson, who will be taking on the Orange next, what were the biggest things that you took away from the Florida State game?
You know, they had everything against them. You know, and they managed to still go out there and fight. They could have laid down and no one would have gave them any word for the worry, you know, because if they just Florida State, they're more team. But Syracuse went out there and fought tooth and nail, you know, and a few plays here and there, a few mistakes here and there, and the outcome of that game could have been a lot different. But you know what? I give them a lot of credit, you know, and that bodes well for the future. As I said before, those young quarterbacks, you know, AJ and Austin went out there and they played one heck of a game. Did they make a few mistakes? Yes, they made very, very young mistakes. But you know what? Those won't be mistakes when they're juniors and seniors. Those will be plus plays, and those will be plays that carry us into that next level.
Something that Doug Marrone brought up when he was the coach here at Syracuse, now the Buffalo Bills head coach and a former teammate of yours. One of the things he said, when there was a season where he dealt with a lot of injuries, and the team was directly affected by it, no doubt. And Doug Marrone said that the good thing about having injuries is that your guys that aren't playing, your second and third string players, they're getting experience and they're making you a deeper team because they're getting experience, because they're learning. You can never teach game experience. So he said, you know, short-sighted, yeah, our team is affected by it. Long-term, my backups are going to be better players. Is that what you're taking away from Syracuse now, that a guy like A.J. Long or a guy like Austin Wilson or somebody like Steve Ishmael, because as freshmen with 4 years to go, including this season, are having all this experience, that it's only going to bode well for Syracuse in the future, saying, okay, well, you're going to fight for the wide receiver job, you're going to fight to be the starting quarterback, but I already have film on you. You've already been out there for 3, 5, 10, 15 games. Do you think that bodes well for the history of Syracuse?
I think it's great for Syracuse, but a simple fact of injuries, I got a chance to start as a freshman and start the rest of my career. It just gives the young guys a chance to be able to go out there and get a lot of experience, and that's great for the program. That's not only great for the young guys now in the program, it's great for the future of the program in Syracuse.
A.J. Long, somebody that obviously got his first opportunity on the field as a true freshman with Syracuse, he will have his first start for sure against Wake Forest on the road. So his first start will be a road game. He'll be playing in North Carolina. A.J. Long, when I spoke with Dave Clawson, the head coach of Wake Forest, he had this to say about A.J. Quote, I think it's a skill set that's somewhat similar to their starter. End quote. I'll start there. He's comparing A.J. Long, even though A.J.'s a true freshman and has only played one game and not every single down, he says, what A.J. showed me on film, I kind of see that he's like Terrell Hunt. How do you respond to something like that?
I mean, he said their skill set. They have the absolute exact same skill set. I think A.J. Long's a much faster, more athletic quarterback, but I can see what he's saying by his skill set as far as being a pretty good passer, but a very, very, very efficient with his speed and seeing downfield. So I understand what the coach is saying there.
Another thing by Dave Clawson that he said to me was, quote, I think young quarterbacks can have success when they're surrounded by veteran football players, end quote. Something that Scott Schaefer, the head coach of Syracuse, spoke about after the loss to Florida State, that he saw his receivers get around Austin Wilson, get around A.J. Long, and say, we're here for you guys. They were there in the huddle saying, whatever you want to do, we're right here, we're by your side. I thought that the wide receivers for Syracuse played the best game they played all season outside of their two wins against Villanova and Central Michigan. I thought the best wide receiver game was the game where they had two new quarterbacks throwing to them, and I think it's because they knew that they had to raise their level to back up these newbies. How did you see the wide receivers in this game? I really honestly thought if they play the way that they played against FSU, they could be a pretty darn good receiver core if they continue to progress that way.
I mean, that's it. The veteran players did a great job in stepping up and making these young quarterbacks feel comfortable. And by veteran players, I mean guys who have played a considerable amount, you know, whether it be a sophomore, whether it be a junior, whether it be a senior. You know, these veteran players definitely made, you know, A.J. and Austin feel very, very comfortable, made them feel welcome, made them feel like they're a part of the family, which is very, very huge in football. So it's great when you're a young quarterback and you come out there and you have the confidence in you to be able to go out there and perform, you know, not just in front of your teammates, but with your teammates, to be able to go out there and just make plays going up and down the field, and they have your back. And that's one good thing that's a very, very confidence builder for a young player, that they have you know that your teammates have your back.
You talk about the veteran wide receiver stepping up, and you said some of them veteran just out of the simple fact that they've been playing in games. So one of those guys that I think you could say that is another true freshman, that's Steve Ishmael. When you look at Steve Ishmael, and I am not surprised at all, and he's not any relation to Kadri Ishmael that played at Syracuse, although it sounds the same, it's not spelled the same, but the effect on the team, the positive effect is definitely there. I'm not surprised that Syracuse getting a Floridian wide receiver in Steve Ishmael and talking to him through his recruiting process, that they were getting somebody good. Had a good feeling about Steve coming in. I didn't think Steve was going to take long to get accustomed to the offense and be effective. Eric White, the director of recruiting for Syracuse, told me, he said, Dan, watch, about three games or so in, he's going to make a positive effect on the team. Had his best game in the fifth game of the season for Syracuse, and he did it against the then top team in the country and defending national champion. Is Steve Ishmael, in your mind, the best wide receiver on Syracuse right now?
That's hard to say right now because Ashton Grove and this team are still injured right now. And I think those two are talented, very, very good veteran players. But, you know, he's a young player right now who's very, very talented. His upside is through the roof right now. So, you know, down the year, the time will tell. But for right now, I think he's a very, very talented receiver. But for me, it's hard to call him the best receiver on the team right now. If we're talking about healthy players, yes. If we're talking about overall players, that's debatable.
Steve Ishmael, true freshman. A.J. Long, true freshman. They both come in the 2014 recruiting class. They practice together. They know each other well. Scott Schaefer told me today that they're gym rats. That's what he likes to call them. That he knows that Steve Ishmael, like he had said this week, was somebody that after practice, he goes and he looks on the field, and there's a receiver out there that's got his own cones, and he's putting the cones down on the field to get ready to practice by himself, and it's Steve Ishmael. A.J. Long, Steve Ishmael, both being true freshmen, was this the best thing that happened to Syracuse because they obviously have a relationship and they practice together, they learn things together. They obviously shown that they can hook up together on the field well. The only two touchdowns scored against FSU were A.J. Long to Steve Ishmael. So when you see this connection between the two of them, is this something that Syracuse, in your mind, kind of fell into because freshmen practice with freshmen and they get to know each other well?
I mean, I think they get to know each other very, very well. And it's a great, great advantage for Syracuse to have those two young men be able to go out there and play, you know, for the longevity they're going to have the Syracuse together. I mean, 3-4 years of playing together with someone, you get to know that person, especially if it's a quarterback and a wide receiver. So that's a blessing for Syracuse in disguise. And these two young men can have a chance to play as true freshmen and be able to go out there and, you know, and get some synchronicity between one another and be able to do that, not just this year, but next year, the following year, and hopefully they'll both stay there for a senior year and don't go pro their fourth year. So it's definitely going to be a blessing for Syracuse down the future that these two young men will be able to go out there and play for such a long time together.
When A.J. Long and Steve Ishmael can find each other and have that connection and know A.J. Long knows when to deliver the ball, Steve Ishmael knows where to be, Steve was able to beat guys, A.J. Long was able to figure out when the ball needed to get there, how it needed to get there, where to place it. When you see that happen against a Florida State defense, looking at Wake Forest, looking ahead, and not to discredit anybody, but Syracuse playing against the top team in the country at the time in Florida State, what does that tell you about what could potentially happen in a season that some people are worried about with Syracuse this year in the 2014 season, knowing that not only have Long and Ishmael been successful, but they were successful against a potentially very good team, at least a respectable team. What does that say about the rest of the season and what the season could be as people kind of bite their nails with Syracuse right now?
It says it's one game. One game doesn't make you a pro. One game doesn't make you a superstar. You know what makes you a superstar and a pro? Consistency. So if they do this the next game, and the following game, and the following game, and thereafter, and the entire career, then they become very, very good together. But one game doesn't make you a pro. I just sit here and list you thousands upon thousands of players that went out there and had one great game, and the next game, you know, tainted. So if these young men go out there and perform consistently on a day in and day out and work at their trade, they'll be fine. Right now, we know their potential. They have to live up to their potential game in and game out, not just in games but in practice. If they do that, they'll be fine.
Dave Clawson, the head coach of Wake Forest, also said to me going into this game against Syracuse that he felt that not only is the skill set of A.J. Long similar to Terrell Hunt, but he said, quote, he's got a skill set that, a good skill set, that he throws the ball well, but he also said that when the play breaks down, that's where he can really get dangerous. That he saw A.J. Long on film, even though it was only one game, that when play broke down, we got to watch him on his feet. You look at quarterbacks across the country, Syracuse has been asked a question numerous times, how do you deal with a dual threat quarterback? They have one now, and it's not that they didn't have one with Terrell Hunt, but I thought A.J. moved the ball better than Terrell Hunt has been. I thought Austin Wilson moved the ball better against Florida State than Terrell Hunt had been. So when we look at A.J. Long being a dual threat quarterback, and we look at the respect that he's getting from Wake Forest head coach Dave Clawson, I know it's only one game and we talked about consistency, but is A.J. Long more dangerous when the play breaks down than Terrell Hunt was when Terrell was going out? Because we talk about consistency, Terrell Hunt wasn't consistent at all.
I'd say he's more dangerous for the simple fact that he's a better runner. He sees the field a lot better, and he's faster. He's much faster than Terrell Hunt. And AJ can run. You know, so that creates a problem for any defensive lineman or a linebacker. When a quarterback can run, he has speed. Because now, you know, you have to be on your horse, as we say, you know, stay in front of him. Because if you don't, he'll run right by you. So he definitely creates a much more of a matchup problem than Terrell did because of his speed. He's pure, flat out, just straight ahead running ability.
That coming from Rob Drummond of Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, I'm Dan Zatora, broadcasting here with you live every single Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. at Borio's Restaurant with Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Rob and I will be back for one more set where we break down Wake Forest and we give our predictions. Rob has been reluctant to give me a score, and I'm going to try my best to get him to give some type of number today. Just for the fun of it, to have, maybe you can give Plinko maybe some number. I don't know. Maybe you can give Take 5 numbers and help some people out that are looking to bet. But that coming from Rob Drummond. We'll be talking here. Dan Zatora and Rob Drummond. Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora live from Borio's Restaurant. We will be putting a big bow on Wake Forest and Syracuse coming up in just a few minutes here from Borio's Restaurant. Truly a Four Seasons restaurant with the best view in Central New York.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora live from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. The restaurant with the greatest view in Central New York all four seasons as the leaves change, and then as soon as the ice freezes over for the winter there, to watch the snow fall and be here any night of the week is definitely something special. Had the opportunity to come to Borio's in the winter last year. We'll be doing it again this year. And Rob and I are here every single Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. So make sure you come out and see us. And every time you come out and see us, you get the opportunity to get 10% off at Borio's Restaurant, which you can only get through my show, Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora. And you can only get it when we're here. So make sure, if you're in Borio's Restaurant, to come up and grab one so you can get your 10% off VIP opportunity to Borio's Restaurant, as well as other partners of Dan Zatora Broadcast Media in the community. So make sure you get your card while you're here. I'm here, as always, with Rob Drummond talking about football and other sports, as well as bullying, domestic abuse, child abuse. If we sit here long enough, God only knows what we'll be talking about, but talking about shoplifting now with NFL players. So Rob Drummond of Syracuse, the CFL, and the NFL will be here with me every single Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And, of course, I'm Dan Zatora here with Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora. And to wrap up Wake Forest, it's time to take a look at what the Wake Forest Demon Deacons will bring forward with the Syracuse Orange. And as we look at Wake Forest, it's important to note the fact that the Wake Forest Demon Deacons only averaged 31 yards on the ground in their rushing attack. Syracuse obviously has an arsenal of running backs, Scott Schaefer told me that he's still confident that there's a good amount of running backs that can get the job done. He still believes that there's enough guys in the locker room that can help out Syracuse. What do you think about the rushing attack right now as far as how it's utilized, where the talent is? What have you taken away from Syracuse's running game?
Well, Syracuse is a very talented running group, you know, and I always say, you know, you get the run established because of the past even that much more. And with these young quarterbacks, you know, early on in their young careers, I mean, it's very important. These running backs, you know, Gully, McFarland, they have to go out there and play. You know, Morris, you know, my man Amin Moore, you know, to go out there and be able to establish himself, sort of open up things a lot for the passing game. So the running game just has to go out there and establish himself and just do what they've been doing all year. Do what they've been doing the past couple of years. Just go out there and control the game and control the clock.
Adonis Amin Moore, as of right now, we've talked about whether or not he's being utilized correctly. Through five games, outside of the Central Michigan game where they really allowed him to play, and that was the only game that Syracuse broke open and won by a huge margin. Is Adonis Amin Moore being utilized correctly in your mind? My answer is going to be no, because they win on the road 40-3 against Central Michigan. I don't care who you play against. It's hard to win on the road when your fans aren't there or aren't there in droves. And that was his 100-yard-plus game. I don't think since then he's been utilized that well at all. Do you agree, or how do you think he's been utilized?
I think he's being underutilized. I mean, he's a battering ram. He's a downhill runner. You know, he's just no nonsense. He gets the tough yards. I think he should be the starter and basically set it up for the rest of those guys who are scat backs, who are slashers, who basically can hit the hole and hit a home run. I think Amin Moore should start the game and just pummel those defensive linemen, all those linebackers and those QBs, and now he's testing everything to make the rest of those guys' job easier. But hey, what do I know? I'm not the head coach.
Jerome Smith, who played for the Syracuse Orange, was a double-digit touchdown running back in his last season, was a 1,000-yard rusher the season before that, is on the practice squad in the NFL for the Atlanta Falcons. I think he knows what the heck he's talking about. Time after time after time, in Scott Schaefer's first season as the head coach, the first run of any drive, especially first down, was up the middle to Jerome Smith. When Jerome was talking with me about the running game, he said to me, going into the FSU game, Prince Tyson Gully isn't a bad running back. He likes Prince. Prince was obviously his teammate for a long time. But he said, look at what Prince and I did together. He said, Prince is not the between tackle guy. He said, when I'm breaking and I'm going up the middle and he can go to the outside or he can catch a pass, look at how dangerous Prince and I were together. That's what Adonis Amin Moore should be doing. He should be going out there with Prince Tyson Gully and doing it like him and Jerome used to do it. Do you agree with Jerome, and he's not a coach either, but do you agree that Jerome Smith saying Adonis Amin Moore, Prince Tyson Gully, out there together all the time is better than what Syracuse has been doing?
I completely agree. I mean, it's thunder and lightning. You know, it's like the first thing you should establish with the runners, you should establish power. It's easy to outrun somebody and run to the outside, but once you establish that power in the middle, now you keep them on their heels. And right now, Syracuse is not keeping them on their heels, because Tyson Gully is not that power runner that keeps him on their heel. They know he's going to try and run outside so they can prepare for it. If you have to prepare for that guy running up inside and running you over, it's a whole different world.
You've been in running back situations where it's just you. You've been in running back situations where you're sharing time with somebody else, either on the field or you're coming out. I know that Syracuse has not had one game where they've had one running back in a long time. But what's a better Syracuse team in your mind? Having two running backs out there on the field at the same time, or having two running backs, three running backs out there, but one at a time? Are you more a proponent of one at a time or two at a time for Syracuse?
I mean, it depends on the down. It depends on the situation. It depends on the backs. You know, I mean, me and Michael Lawrence are better off with Daryl Johnson in there, so we're a better team with two of us on the field at the same time. Yes, we're three talented running backs, but we're better off with two of us on the field at the same time. So it depends on it's situational. So, you know, they're a multitude of talented running backs. You know, in any given situation, either of them can take it to the house or do a great job for him. So that's just something that down and distance will take days.
And one thing I think that we haven't seen with Syracuse a lot is the split back situation. And in a split back situation, with Adonis and me Moore and Prince Tyson Gully, and I use the two of them because they have totally different skill sets, is that you don't know if they're going to run it with Adonis. You don't know if they're going to run it with Prince. At the same time, Adonis is a runner more than he's a catcher, and then Prince Tyson Gully is a check down guy who can always, he has great hands. Some of the best hands as a receiver out there, even though he's a running back, and even though he's smaller than a lot of the receivers. So when you look at Syracuse, are you surprised that they haven't used the split back situation? Because it seems like teams understand after a while, okay, Prince Tyson Gully beat us, but after a while he's not going to do it anymore. Or if it's just Adonis, he's not going to beat us every time. We saw that on the goal line against FSU, and we saw it in other instances. So is Syracuse better served right now to be in a split back situation where a team doesn't know where the handoff is going? Because at least to me, it seems like in the here and now, when there's one back in there and the field gets shortened, Syracuse struggles a lot more in the red zone.
No, nothing surprising in what Syracuse does right now. You know, they're unpredictable. I mean, as I said, they're both very, very talented running backs. And certain plays, you know, down in district can take plays. You know, I sat there and watched the Florida State game where they had the ball down deep in the end zone. And I said the series before, they need to get the ball down. I mean, more. And they gave the ball to him three times in a row. And I said to myself, at that situation, that's not really good to young man to go all three times in a row. You know? You know what I mean? The first down, they should have taken the pass. Then they should have given it to him twice. But you know what? It depends on the down and situation. And the distance to the goal line, you know. So, and they have a lot of plays scripted. So a lot of times, coaches won't call plays that they think maybe may work. They'll call plays that they see off the script. So, as I said, it depends on the down and distance and what they're doing, and the game pace and the flow, you know, and what they're trying to do. They're getting the end zone, which dictates what they're doing in the back and the personnel they have in there.
I think this Wake Forest team, looking at their side of it, their offense. I mentioned before they only average 31 rushing yards a game. For Wake Forest this season, they've rushed the ball 179 times, and they've gained 186 yards. They are an abysmal rushing team. They are averaging 1 yard a carry. When you look at a team like that, you know that they're going to pass it. They have almost 1,100 yards to 186 yards, speaking of passing to rushing. And Wofford is the guy, when you talk about Wake Forest, that's who you talk about. And he has about a 60% completion percentage. So they don't have a prolific offense, but they're obviously pass dominant. From what you've seen from the Syracuse corners going into this game, how confident are you in Julian Wiggum and Brandon Reddish to go into a game like this and face a guy like Wofford, knowing that they're going to be threatened with the pass a lot more than they're threatened with the run?
I'm very confident in them young men. They've been playing very, very well as of lately. And to come off the game that they have against Florida State, you know, I give them a lot of credit. You know, right now they know they're going to get some pressure on the guys up front. The ball's going to be in the air. And when the ball's going to be in the air all the time, you know, any defensive back will tell you, they can do showtime. And by showtime, I mean, that could be interceptions, ran back for touchdowns. So it's these young men a chance to be able to go out there and start making a name for themselves and start getting themselves back to where they need to be, because the ball's going to be flying in the air, and that just means interceptions, and that would mean interception return for touchdowns.
Terrell Eskridge got his hand on a potential interception from Jameis Winston from Florida State, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Everett Golson from Notre Dame, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, had 7 touchdowns to no interceptions when they went into the MetLife game. Terrell Eskridge intercepted him, returned it for a touchdown. Syracuse had 2 interceptions. Syracuse has shown that when they go up against the best of the best, they can take the ball away. What does that say about Syracuse going up against Wake Forest, even though they're going to be on the road, knowing the way that Terrell Eskridge has played against Jameis Winston and Everett Golson?
You know, it says they should dominate the game, but then again, that's why the game was played. You know, paper means nothing. On paper, Syracuse should win this game and win this game handily. But as again, I'll say again, that's why the game is played. That's why the Florida State game was played. The Syracuse was 25-point underdog, but yet they still had a chance with the 26 here and there to win that game. That's why the game is played. On paper, it looks great for Syracuse. For Syracuse to go out there and do some great things, but that's why the game is played.
When you look at Wake Forest's record, their games don't look as pretty as a lot of other teams in the ACC. They lost to Louisiana Monroe 17-10. They beat Gardner-Webb 23-7. Utah State they lost to. They beat Army by a field goal. They lost to Louisville by 10. They got blown out by Florida State, kind of how Syracuse did last year. They lost by 40 against Florida State in their last game. They've had 2 weeks to get ready for this, though. When a team is given a bye week and they're given 2 weeks of preparation, have you, from your time playing, seen a more dangerous team, no matter what their record was or how they looked, when they had that extra week of preparation?
Not so much as a dangerous team, but a healed team, a healthy team, because there are larger players who are injured to get healthy. You know, so, but as we look at the stats in Wake Forest, they're not doing that good on the ground anyway. So if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm going to not stack the box, but let my interior guys play and run around and have fun. Knowing they're going to put the ball up in the air, so my DBs better be ready. I may even go nickel package, knowing they're going to throw the ball all the time, because they're not going to beat me on the ground. If you beat me on the ground, they deserve to win the game. So right now, Syracuse has to prepare for them to pass and pass a lot, because the only way Wake Forest win this game is they have a great day through the air.
How do you define Syracuse football right now? They have the same record as Wake Forest. They have the same record out of conference at 2-4. They have I said 2-3 earlier on in the show. Same record, 2-4 overall. Both 0-2 in the ACC. How do you define Syracuse football right now? What are some of those key bullet points that people should know?
Just go out there and be physical. It's a turning point in their season. They have a lot to prove for not just themselves, but the entire community who supports them and backs them. So right now, just go out there and play and get capable of playing. If they play up that high, that energy they played coming out of the Florida State game, they'll be great. Everyone will cheer them on. But if they go out there and lay an egg and play flat again, everyone will start to wonder. So they just have to go out there and be the dominant team that they're capable of being against an inferior opponent.
When you look at the Syracuse team, are you excited being a true freshman that got out there? Are you excited to see Steve Ishmael, A.J. Long, true freshman, getting an opportunity again? Because it doesn't happen a lot. Lord knows that Boeheim doesn't allow that much for true freshman basketball. So when you see true freshmen out there, does it give you some nostalgia and bring you back to those moments and are happy that those guys are getting the opportunities they're getting?
Not really. But the simple fact that, you know, it just reminds me of the simple fact that how much hard work these young men put in to go out there and be the best possible, not just athlete, but student they possibly can on campus. And I know the fun they're having. Would they love to be winning more? Yes, they would. But you know what? That's going to take time. But I know these young men are going out there and giving 100%, trying the best they can. And they just want to not just impress the fans and cheer them on, but impress family, impress friends, and impress themselves, because they came to Syracuse for a reason. And right now, they're fulfilling a dream. And that dream is to be able to go out there and play Division I college football at a high level and do well.
It's prediction time. Where do you have Syracuse in this game against Wake Forest?
Winning. You're asking for a score. I have no idea what the score is going to be. Once again, I have no idea what team's going to show up. You know, if AJ goes out there and has a stellar light up game, you know, Syracuse will score 50 points. If he goes out there and, you know, has a down game, you know, just lets a lot of things get to his head, you don't know what's going to happen. He's a true freshman, you know. So, but I think Syracuse is going to win the game. Are they going to win by a touchdown? I have no idea. They're going to win by 3 touchdowns. I don't know. I can't tell the mood. I can't tell the tone, because Coach Schaefer won't let anybody talk to the players or coaches. So, you know, it's hard to dictate what the mood and tone's going to be. But I do see Syracuse winning, and I do see them building off what they did last week.
As Rob just stated, we've come full circle. Can't say a lot when you don't hear a lot. But I have Syracuse winning in this game as well against Wake Forest. I think that this would be a debilitating loss more than anything else right now, and Syracuse doesn't need that. I know that A.J. Long is a very excited player, and as Scott Schaefer said, it's very contagious. One of the things that stuck around me is that Scott Schaefer told me that A.J. Long says before practice, says, "Come on, coach, let's get out there so I can embarrass your defense." And I love a player that can say something like that and have that confidence and that belief in himself. And for the sake of Syracuse, you know, you got to hope that he keeps that going. I do want to make a quick note here, as now we've wrapped up, we both have Syracuse beating Wake Forest. I want to let everybody know that we will be here again tomorrow night. We'll be here with Adrian Autry of Syracuse Orange Men's Basketball, and we'll be previewing, God bless you, we'll be previewing the Orange Madness. So if you want to know about the dunk contest, the three-point contest, songs that players are going to be coming out to, different things that are going to be going on, we have an inside track at Orange Madness coming up tomorrow night, courtesy of Adrian Autry, and that's 7:45 to 9. So it's different than our typical time. I'll be here at Boreo's, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, for those listening in, tomorrow night, 7:45 to 9, to preview Orange Madness in the Syracuse season. And I also want to invite everybody out to Clay Central Park, 7858 Henry Clay Boulevard. this weekend, a bunch of young football players, as young as 5 years old, are going to be treated like they're in the NFL. It's going to be treated like a bowl game, and I have the opportunity to commentate out there and really show some love to the young kids who are trying to play the sport the right way and trying to do something that they love. So come out and support your community by going out to Clay Park this Saturday, games all day long, and Rob Drummond and I will be here on Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. Every single Wednesday we'll be here at Borio's Restaurant. So we thank you for coming, and we thank you for listening in, and we'll be back. Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora every Wednesday, Borio's Restaurant.